Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. My producer today is Matt Havia. Lou Pellegrino, the usual producer, he is on his honeymoon, and we wish him all the best as he forges in a new life and hopefully taking some time off. Well deserved. The guest this week is the fine author. He's been a frequent guest of this podcast. I think it's number 4 or 5. It is James Andrew Miller, the author of Powerhouse, The Untold Story of Hollywood's Creative Artists Agency, that is now in paperback as of a couple of weeks ago. You, of course, know him from Those Guys Have All the Fun, Inside the World of ESPN, that is the ESPN Oral History. There'll be an updated version of that eventually. And Live from New York, The Complete Uncensored History of Saturday Night Live, as told by its stars, writers, and guests. That's the definitive book on Saturday Night Live, if you're a fan. James Andrew Miller has been here many times to discuss ESPN, and today, that will be the topic of our conversation. Massive moves a couple weeks ago with ESPN management, streamlining its operations, promoting some, and letting go of some. James Andrew Miller, welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's start here. By the way, it's weird not having O'Rand in Trina. It's more professional with you here, which I like already. On June 16th, the official word came down from ESPN that ESPN president John Skipper was making significant changes to his management team. I'm going to sort of go through these almost one by one, and we'll try to dissect them as much as we can. Those moves included promoting Connor Schell to executive vice president of content. That means he oversees all ESPN content creation on all platforms, in charge of studio and remote productions, digital and print content, ESPN films, original content, audio, and ESPN's talent office. Jim, as you wrote, John Skipper essentially has named his John Skipper. John Skipper used to sort of be in this role for George Bodenheimer. So I wanted to sort of do this podcast as best we can, sort of piece by piece with each person. So let's start with Connor Schell. What does this move mean internally for ESPN? And then just as important, I'll let you go on as long as you want. What does this move mean for viewers, readers, consumers of ESPN's content?
Well, I mean, first of all, it is significant. John Skipper had a bigger job. He had a slightly larger portfolio when he was head of content under George Bodenheimer. But make no mistake, this is a big move. And I believe that this is the first time since Skipper became president himself 5 years ago that you now have a kind of working architecture that matches Skipper's sensibilities and his strengths and his weaknesses. I think part of it was Skipper wanted to be his own Skipper.
That's interesting. I agree.
Particularly at the beginning. I think he wanted to hold on to the things that he was very, very good at and the relationships. And I think he had his own learning curve, which, by the way, happens when you get the big job. Skipper used to say that when he would go to Burbank, he would often forget his ID at the guard gate, and they would have to call in, well, who are you? And let's see your license and everything else.
It's crazy.
And the first time he went after becoming president, he pulled up and they said, hello, Mr. Skipper, how are you? I mean, it's a different job. And I think that he appreciated it in terms of title, but I don't think he immediately appreciated it in terms of just what a huge, huge canvas it was. And so here we are 5 years later. He's letting go more than he ever has in the content world. And I think he's made a decision, which no one can accuse him of rushing into, of picking Connor. And let's just say that there were times when this decision it was certainly never inevitable. There were other people that were interested in this. There were other players that were vying for some part of this pie. There were different configurations contemplated through the years. But I think what John has done now is he's put in place, well, there's three things that have happened. One is he's got three people, and I'm not going to jump ahead with Justin and Burke.
And you said the name, Justin Connolly, who is the executive vice president, affiliate sales and marketing. He oversees distribution strategy and development for ESPN. Most importantly, he is a partner to those at Disney Strategy. He's the connection to Disney and Burbank.
Right. And let's not forget about Burke Magnus.
Right. You want me to give you his title? Sure. Executive VP of Programming and Scheduling. That means Burke is in charge of the programming business. He has the relationships with the leagues, with the colleges, a massively important position. If, you know, ESPN's talking to the ACC commissioners or the Big Ten commissioners or the NFL, that's Burke Magnus. And just as important, he now is sort of the point person for the relationship between Disney and BAM Tech. So that's another guy who sort of has a big slice of the future pie for ESPN.
And we shouldn't forget Chris Dreesen, who has been there for quite some time and is the CFO.
Right.
By the way, this might sound like inside baseball, but
this whole podcast is inside baseball.
One of the things, though, about this architecture is that now that Skipper has put it in place, it's a really interesting way to look and see how modern media is being managed, because these silos and the way that he has divided the responsibility are a function not only of what he considers to be the strengths and weaknesses of these people, but also about the duties in this media world in 2017 and beyond. And so I think, you know, for people who are studying what's going on now and for the future, kind of like write your own org chart and look at these disciplines and look at what's under each one of these people, because it's a very interesting way of looking at expertise and what kind of knowledge base you need to have in these big jobs.
All right, let's take Connor Schell, Jim, to start with. He, his background is, if any, again, this is a very inside baseball podcast, so if you happen to have heard of him, you would have heard of him through ESPN's 30 for 30. He's sort of been in charge of ESPN Films. He was at the beginning with Simmons and some of the other people there to come up with the 30 for 30 concept. He's very tight with Simmons, so he has that longtime relationship there. He
let me interrupt you for one second, because and this is not taking anything away from Connor.
Right.
But at the time that 30 for 30 was starting, it was probably one of the times of maximum influence for Bill Simmons. Bill Simmons had an unusually close relationship with John Skipper and with John A. Walsh, who was at the company at the time. And he was probably the highest paid employee, and he had a mind that was constantly floating ideas around and pushing the envelope for them. And he had decided that his golden boy and the person that he wanted to promote and have be promoted was Connor Schell. So I think that Connor would probably acknowledge that. I'm not saying that Connor Schell wouldn't have succeeded if Bill Simmons had never been at ESPN, but it was a big, big gust of wind at a critical time for Connor.
All right. There's no one's arguing Simmons' influence. And my God, you love Brian Curtis and Bill Simmons as much as I love my toddlers. So you have to get that love in there.
Welcome to the exaggeration part of the podcast.
All right. We have must focus here, Jim. You're almost like training here. Let's stay on pitch. So Connor Schell comes from this world, and we should mention that, his massive success, maybe he gets this job anyway, Jim, but that ESPN winning a Oscar and Connor Schell bringing in Ezra Edelman, giving him Edelman the freedom to do that, that had to raise his level in the eyes of Disney. Let's ask that for a second, right?
Well, of course.
Right.
I mean, it was masterful, and it was, by the way, much harder than people realize. It's not just like, okay, I think Ezra, you know, you'd be good for this, because Ezra was, first of all, going to do something else. Then that didn't happen. But it's also this idea that in a world where, you know, executives are always trying to control artistic properties, when I interviewed Ezra, he was quite open about the fact that Connor left him alone, and there was a big accordion.
Is huge. Yeah.
One day it's 5.5 hours, one day it's six. I mean, it's like Connor gave him a lot of freedom and supported it and knew when to jump in and knew when to leave him alone. And that, to me, is one of the key strands of DNA in a creative executive.
Definitely. Connor Schell has a reputation, having interviewed a lot of these filmmakers, from the John Hawks to the Billy Corbins, et cetera. Like, he's got a great rep in dealing with filmmakers and creative people. And I think that's going to be his biggest strength of this job, is I think that talent really likes to be around him. He shares the mic, so to speak. He lets people do their own thing. The question to me is going to be, here's a couple of things, and this is where we get into with Connor Schell, and we'll eventually get to some of these other execs. Connor Schell is a massive supporter of the upcoming Mike Greenberg solo project. He brought in the producer that's going to run this, Bill Wolf. He's absolutely behind it. He believes that this show, I don't know, I'm not sure he believes it's going to be a hit, but he believes the show certainly will beat what was on SportsCenter prior. But that's a big, big gamble that he is putting on Greenberg, at least for Connor Schell. To me, one of his earliest things that he's sort of staking his position on is the success of the Greenberg show, and maybe to a smaller extent, the success of the Bomani Jones Pablo Torre show. Now, Jim, you've said this many times, and I always respect you for this. We all know these are tiny little things compared to ESPN's big business, which is sports rights and everything else. These are little lines on a balance sheet, but these lines get a lot of attention. You know, First Take and all that stuff gets attention. So the Mike Greenberg show, I think, not only is a revenue, potential revenue maker, but in terms of the coverage it's going to get as the centerpiece to start ESPN's conversation day, it's a huge deal. And Connor's rolling the dice on Mike Greenberg as the guy who can get it done. Skipper, obviously, to an extent as well, but both of these guys are now tied to Mike Greenberg. And as you reported, they're paying Greenberg $6.5 million. No one's ever questioned your reporting on that. I've watched. That is a massive outlay for this guy. So would you agree, Connor Schell, sort of number one big project, at least to start with, is can he make Mike Greenberg a success in the morning as a soloist with obviously some people around him as a full-time cast?
I'll go a step further. I think there's more pressure on Connor than there is on Greenberg.
Wow, that's interesting. I wouldn't have expected that. Why?
Because I think that he is the master of this domain. He has the supervision. He has to make this work. And as a result, I mean, Greenberg's got a contract. I mean, obviously Greenberg wants to be successful and he wants to be part of a hit show. But the truth is that Disney shareholders and Bob Iger and now John Skipper are looking at Connor Schell saying, okay, this is your portfolio. You got to make this work. And if we go back for a moment to the 30 for 30s, you know, there's kind of like two paradigms for leadership and those things. Connor, as we were just discussing, is the kind of executive that stands back and lets the Ezra Edelmans and others find their way and, you know, helps them achieve their vision. If you look at what Mark Shapiro did, for instance, in the mammoth sports century at the turn of the century did.
Right.
Mark Shapiro came in with a vision. He said, this is what I want it to be. This is what I want it to look like. And I am going to drive that train as hard as it can possibly be driven. And everybody's going to follow in lockstep. He had huge fights with John Walsh. He had huge fights with everybody. But he had a vision. So the question is, and by the way, both kinds of approaches can work.
Definitely.
The question I'm curious about right now is, does Connor Schell himself have a specific vision for Greenberg, or is he looking to Bill Wolf? Is he looking to Greeny? Is he looking to others to come up with something? And then he'll be like the Supreme Court with pornography, that he'll know it only when he sees it.
I mean, obviously, I have to ask him what his vision is. I don't know. I would have to guess that he must. I think if you're in his position and you've been a creative force at ESPN Films, and you certainly have an idea what good content. Now, the one thing about Connor Schell, who I personally like, he's a fun guy to be around. He knows what good content is, and you just based on his success at ESPN Films. What I wonder, and I think me and you have talked about this on previous podcasts. You're probably more of the Kofi Annan here. You're always a diplomat, Jim, when it comes to this stuff. I no disrespect to Mike Greenberg, but it feels to me. And he's a professional broadcaster, and he can certainly run a show. And I think he's good to work with. From I know a lot of people sort of have worked with him over the years. The morning space right now is so competitive with the three big shows at the networks, the Today and Good Morning America and CBS's show. Then you have the cable shows in an era of Donald Trump, the Fox and Friends, the CNN show, the Morning Joe. There's such a lust and a thirst for political news right now. Then you filter down to some of the sports-specific stuff. NFL Network has a new show. Or it's not really new anymore, but they have one. MLB Network has. And so, to me, the only way ESPN can have sort of a breakout hit is if the person who's in that lead chair is destination viewing every day. And I just don't see Mike Greenberg as that broadcaster. Now, if you're going to tell me, well, we'll set it up, it'll be a cool show, we'll make it television only, we'll beat what used to be on SportsCenter in the morning, maybe. I buy that. And if that's success, then I think show may have success. I just don't see that. I just don't see a Mike Greenberg vehicle. And again, this is totally no disrespect to him. It doesn't strike me as a sports fan wakes up in the morning and is like, I have to hear what Mike Greenberg has to say, or I have to hear Mike Greenberg interview Roger Goodell. Because a lot of what Mike and Mike has been has not necessarily been getting breaking news or the toughest interviews. It's sort of just two guys hanging out, right, who are friendly enough, and you listen to them banter and you bring in 50 ESPN personalities to market the day. So that would be my only concern. Now, I could certainly be proven wrong, but had I been Connor Schell, I don't think I would have centered my immediate future around Greenberg. Then again, I don't know if there's anybody at ESPN who would have fit what I'm looking for.
Right. Now, remember, they're coming off a multi-year experiment where they basically decided just the opposite, right? This is a, make no mistake, this is a 180-degree swing.
Right.
Because they're coming off of a huge technological, like, let's make it, put it in the digital center and a huge, huge stage for SportsCenter, and the set is the star, and then we're going to have all these replaceable people come in and out.
Right.
And that did not work. And in fact, the cavernous quality of the set actually made the SportsCenter anchors look even smaller.
Small,
we didn't get to know them. They were interchangeable, and that wound up being a problem. So I understand what fueled this decision. And, you know, from their minds, this is like, you know, Kimmel and Fallon or Colbert or something. They want to put a personality out there and have people drawn to that personality. The question that I don't know the answer to is, how are they going to define success?
I would think, just logically, don't you think it would be, can we beat, well, you know, usually whether it's Jamie Horowitz at Fox, whether it's the ESPN execs, it's usually, have we beaten what was there before year over year? I feel like that's how, I'm not saying I would define success that, but I feel like that's the story you can put to the market.
Pretty low bar for a $6.5 million star. Plus, God knows what the supporting cast is going to be.
Right, right.
And
I don't disagree with you, but I think that's, you could at least sell to the market. I think we could probably have our own show about how SportsCenter AM probably like was never really fair to Jamie Sire and Nagandi. They kind of never figured out what that show was. But I think they're going to, in my opinion, at least in terms of a public relations / let's bring this to the media buyers play, I think they're gonna aim to, we're going to top what was the rating before by this amount. And if that's the case, they may actually do that. It's possible with a new set and obviously a ton of promotion for this show, which is going to come. And, you know, I guess a regular cast of people who you know are going to be there every day, they probably would. If I had to guess today, they probably beat whatever the SportsCenter AM ratings were after 6 months.
Maybe. I mean, look, when Josh Elliott and Hannah Storm were doing it at 9 o'clock, it was a live SportsCenter.
Right.
I mean, they had some pretty decent numbers back then, and then things started to go south. But it'll be interesting. I'm still waiting to see how Bill Wolf and Connor flush out the 3 hours.
Do you think they're going to? I mean, obviously Bill Wolf had massive success with Rachel Maddow, not nearly any kind of success with The View. Way back in the day, he was with Kellerman at IMAX. That was a flop. But, you know, again, he's had six, and he's been in a couple of other places, I think, where he had
around
success.
Around the Horn.
Yeah. Right. Didn't he work with Oberman?
He's a really interesting
guy. Yeah, so this
guy
is a guy, listen, he's a very smart guy. This is a guy who knows how to produce shows. We've all failed. So the only reason I'm bringing that stuff up is, the point is, the guy knows what bad TV is as well as good TV, which I think makes him a potentially really good producer. The question is, can he turn Greenberg a little more, this is not really the right word, but can he turn him more edgy? Can he make him a more provocative interviewer? You've interviewed great producers, Lorne Michaels, et cetera. Can a producer do that? Can you turn Greenberg at least into a little more of a force of nature in the morning?
Maybe, but maybe that's not what the show's going to be. you know, maybe they're going to design a show around what Greenberg can do now and what Greenberg's strengths are, rather than design a show around the fact that Mike Greenberg, all of a sudden at this point in his career, is going to become somebody else.
That's interesting. Okay.
I mean, there's obviously the proverbial fork in the road about that.
Maybe the supporting cast can do some of the stuff that's not a strength for Greenberg. Greenberg's strength is he can pilot a show in and out. He's great at that.
Oh, absolutely. But yeah. You were at the upfronts. He interviewed Serena.
It was a dud. You agree?
Yeah. I mean, Serena is wonderful, but, you know, that was a Porsche going 40 miles an hour.
He didn't get any news. I mean, no offense to Mike, but like, you have Serena Williams. She hasn't done essentially any big interviews since the announcement of her pregnancy, and you got no news out of it. I know it's the upfronts. I know you're supposed to, you know, as the phrase goes, is a Hebrew word, kibitz or something. You know, I know you're supposed to do that stuff, but like, you got to bring more. I mean, one question about, you know, in your mind, 1 year from now, are you going to be back on the court beating the top? Like something to give us some news. He didn't deliver. Again, it's the wrong format. I get it's the upfronts, et cetera. But that's my reservation.
But obviously, one of the reasons why he was there was to start some momentum.
Definitely.
Particularly with the all-important advertising community.
Which I think he got just from being there alone, right? You get that. You see Greenberg without Golic. That in itself is a message to the market, right? That says, "This is our solo. This is a solo guy now.
Right.
This is our guy." Yeah, right. I don't want to get into. Me and you can have a whole podcast on Mike and Mike.
But let's leave it at this. Connor starts off his stewardship of content with a really formidable challenge.
Right.
And this is a high-priced piece of talent. This is a key day part. This is 3 hours
in an environment of declining subs. And declining ratings.
And there's no place to hide.
Right. Do you want to get into the Bomani Jones Pablo thing? Or it's sort of like going to be the same conversation. Let's go elsewhere.
Okay.
It's just a different day part.
By the way, I would add to that, though, what's he going to do about six?
Well, I think from everything I have been told, and I imagine you have been told the same, Jemele Hill and Michael Smith are contractually locked into that spot for a couple of years. They're not. They would have to buy them out significantly. So they're not changing
I'm talking about... When you look at that show, now Connor's in charge, so he gets to say, well, you know what? I think that's exactly what that show should be, so let's just keep that going.
I don't see him changing that show much. Do you? You might have better intel than me.
Well, it depends, again, on how he defines success.
ESPN is a lot of times now, and again, I don't want to be a cynic here because I think there's probably some truth to this because I know SI has to do this too. Success is no longer defined for them based on just linear television ratings. They want to do this aggregate of what kind of YouTube plays are we getting? What kind of buzz are we getting in the, whatever that means, buzz in the marketplace? Are we getting interesting guests to come to our show? Are we extending our brand to audio and podcast?
No, that's why I'm talking about the actual content. Connor's in charge of I'm talking about the fact that now they're doing teasers for that show that say, oh, you listen to this movie review of blank. Now, is that... Does that have a place in SportsCenter?
I think it does.
At 6 o'clock.
They've made that. ESPN has told you that it does. Whether you like it or not, they are allowing their on-air talent to shape those shows and what they want. So Jemele Hill and Michael Smith will talk about pop culture and music, and Scott Van Pelt's going to talk about gambling. You may have different information here. I would be stunned if at this point someone like Connor Schell comes in and changes that paradigm because they've just spent millions and millions of dollars telling you as a viewer that our new SportsCenter strategy is come hang out with these unique individuals who are going to tell you about what they like.
Do you think it's working?
I think it's marginally at best working. I think it worked better with Van Pelt at midnight. Then again, I think the stakes are a little lower with Van Pelt at midnight given the day part. He also gets the benefit of big lead-ins, so if it's like it certainly works when you got massive game leaning into Scott. SC6 is a little bit trickier. I mean, the ratings are down from the Zarniak version, but I've said this 100 times, and people say, oh, you're just kissing Jemele and Michael Hill's butt because you like them personally. I do like them personally, but this is not the case. Like, no one could come into the 6 and stop the bleeding. The 6 p.m. SportsCenter is a relic of the past. It will, from now until eternity, continue to drop in ratings, whether that is Jemele Hill and Michael Smith hosting or Jim Miller and Richard Deitch hosting. God help you if that happens. So they have the issue there. They have a ratings issue there. What is tougher to judge is this larger question, which I guess is what you're getting into, is are you going too far removed from the old Sports Center by bringing in pop culture, by discussing stuff that's not always traditionally discussed in Sports Center? I don't know the answer to that yet. It's still pretty new. I think Skipper certainly wants to bring people of color into the tent, and I think if you have two African-American anchors at six, I think that gives you a shot to bring in younger black viewers in particular. I'd like to think that, like, you know, reflexively, they're not going to lose viewers just because of the color of their skin. Maybe they have, but, like, I think it's too early to get a larger judgment, except that, Jim, I don't think ESPN is going to change what they have gone down the road with, and that is, whether it's a right bet or not, I don't know, but they are betting on significantly over-the-top, personality-driven programming. Before highlights, before news and analysis, the new SportsCenter is about, do you want to hang out with Jamel? Do you want to hang out with Scott? Do you want to hang out with Kenny Mayne? And in six, it's going to be, right, do you want to hang out with Greeny and his three buddies? You tell me. You've been more in-depth in this. Do I think long-term that's a great strategy? I don't know. I don't know what the better strategy is, but that doesn't strike me as a long-term winner, no.
What I'm interested in is 2 years from now, I'd like to be able to sit down and write a piece and say, this is the Connor Schell doctrine on content in this era of ESPN. And does that mean that it's personality driven and you can talk about movies and you can go outside the world of sports? Or, well, I mean, like, what is the construct of what he thinks is going to work? And that's, I think that's a big part of his job and coming up with that. And by the way, just because it exists right now doesn't mean that he's going to stay with it. When Shapiro came in with, you know, when he was head of programming and production, he made wholesale changes 6 weeks from Sunday. So we'll see how much Connor decides to stay with and how much he wants to change.
You want to know what I think would be a cool strategy, although it would be very, very costly, at least in the short term. What I think would be really cool for the SportsCenter brand would be to have SportsCenter compete against itself digitally. Sure, hear me out for a second. The Adrian Wojnarowski, as we both know, is heading to ESPN. Maybe by the end of this month, whenever the exact date is. One of us will find out, I'm sure. If ESPN was smart, they would continue to let Wojnarowski and whatever group he brings along to do the vertical draft show online on ESPN.com or whatever it is, ESPN3, and let that compete against the television program. Because you potentially, to me, bring in different unique viewers. You're giving the audience kind of two different ways to...
Well, it's kind of late because they already screwed Mark Stein.
Well, listen, we both agree that I never understand why you wouldn't keep a newsbreaker around that you're paying. You know what? You're the boss. Work it out. That's what I would say to John Skipper and Connor Schell. You should not get rid of Mark Stein if you already have him on the books. And he's an incredibly loyal employee and has done things just well beyond newsbreaking, from hosting shows to sideline reporting to radio, et cetera. But it's a tangent. So why not then, Jim, at 6 p.m., if you don't want the, let's say, the Jamel Michael option, why not create some unique digital product that's just wholly different? Maybe it's more raw. Maybe it's like the editing is not so slick. And that gives younger viewers maybe the option of checking out like what their version of SportsCenter might be online. And then you have these parallel tracks. So Connor can focus on the linear TV, which obviously is where the revenue is. But then you have this whole other content play on digital that maybe is either it's more traditional SportsCenter or it's just something totally different. Is that too expensive? Do you buy that kind of thinking?
Well, it's expensive, but I mean, again,
they got the studio space, though, right?
They got the studio space. My gosh, they got the studio space.
Right.
Look, Rob King has spent a lot of time thinking about these things and others.
We both like Rob, but he's on the hook too with all these sports centers, don't you think? I mean, if they don't succeed, that's going to go directly to him too. He sort of picked the talent on all this stuff. That's his job. Agreed?
Sure. Sure. I mean, and he's been working hard at it. But, you know, look, I think at the end of the day, we'll see how much gets changed because right now, I don't think in anyone's mind this is a I guess they say it's a story that's developing, but I don't think anyone's satisfied with the way it is right now.
Well, all right. So let me just sort of pinpoint you here. If you had to bet 1 year from today, what are we at here? All right, whatever. June 27th, June 28th, 2018. Do you think the 6 p.m. Sports Center is Jemele Hill and Michael Smith presenting it the same way they're presenting it now?
No.
And why do you say that?
Because I don't think it's successful enough.
Do you think they would still be the talent and the changes in format content, or do you think we might actually have different talent, which would be contractually problematic from what I understand from free ESPN?
I think that they would probably be given a chance to adapt to, but somebody's got to have a vision.
Well, that's what
that's what Connor's supposed to do. Yeah. So if he's going to replace it or change it, then he's got to have a vision and they have to have the opportunity to do it. It can't be like a whale that flies. Oh, a little bit of this and a little bit of this. And it's something that we, you know, doesn't typically work. So I just know that the numbers that the show is generating right now don't seem to be high enough and great enough to sustain over a period of years.
You're listening to The Media Podcast with Richard Deitch.
Are you looking for a financial podcast that tackles the hard-hitting money and investing questions without the financial jargon? Then tune in to the Jill Schlesinger podcast, Better Off. Jill interviews informative and entertaining guests each week to uncover surprising insights and give you actionable information to make the most of your money. Like her episode recently with Michael Lewis, the best-selling author and Vanity Fair contributing editor. You might recognize Michael's work if you are a sports fan. He's the author of Moneyball, of course, The Blind Side, Big Short, and a bunch of other books. In his sit-down with Jill, Michael focuses on his latest book, The Undoing Project, which explores how a friendship did away with the assumptions about the decision-making process of the human mind and led to the creation of the field of behavioral economics, which in turn revolutionized big data studies, advanced evidence-based medicine, and led to new approaches in government regulations. Be sure to check out Michael Lewis on the Better Off with Jill Schlesinger podcast, wherever you subscribe to your favorite podcast. You want to give listeners a little bit of a breakdown of sort of where you see Burke Magnus and Justin Connolly in this universe. You know, a lot of people think that between Connor Schell, Burke Magnus, and Justin Connolly, one of those three will be Skipper's successor. I can honestly say I don't know what John Skipper's thinking is, other than I would imagine he's going to try to stay in that job for as long as he can, because those jobs don't come around often, and we're talking about a lot of money and a lot of influence.
Well, I wrote in this Hollywood Reporter piece that I think that this new alignment almost guarantees him another contract, because he's up sometime. You know, Disney's very quiet about when their executives are up, but it's basically, I think, sometime between December and September.
Of this year, of coming up, December 2017 to 2018.
So maybe at the outskirts, December to December. But none of those three.
Yeah, they're not. John Skipper's kind of a genius in that I feel like he has done a brilliant job of making himself insulated from potential successors. Would you agree? For a long time?
It is a masterclass.
Yeah,
it is.
It's like Churchill.
Look up Machiavelli, and there's a picture of Skipper.
Your word.
It is one of the great parlor acts of all time in management over the last decade.
I agree, and I think he'll be around for a while. Okay, so let's get back to Magnus and Connolly.
First thing to look at, give people Magnus.
Well, just give. I don't think many people who are listening to this, other than, you know, the 5,000 people who are going to download this from the 860 area code. Give people a sense of who Burke Magnus and Justin Connolly are, because you can do it better than I can.
Well, look, first of all, let's pay attention to the fact that Burke is not reporting to Connor.
It's big.
Because that's a pretty significant event. And I believe that there was a time when that was contemplated. And I won't say who wanted that, but Skipper definitely decided that he didn't want that. And so you have Burke as his own domain. Burke Magnus had an opportunity outside of ESPN, and this was after Jamie Horowitz had been let out of his contract, but Burke was not let out of his contract, and Burke stayed. He is a good soldier. He knows how to bite his lip. He's a smart guy, and he gets along well with the conferences and a lot of the people he does business with. The question is there enough, and is this going to work to the point where Burke will stay? I'm not sure when his contract's up. I believe it's
should now though
sooner rather than later.
You got a shot. You got a shot one day to run this kingdom. I would stick around. No,
Maybe.
It's one of the great jobs in sports.
Maybe. Maybe. Devil's in the details. See how it plays out. But, you know, I think that it was definitely a big move of Skipper's to make sure that Burke didn't report to Connor.
Yep.
So Justin has been a fan favorite of Burbank and Skipper for quite some time. He's a really good executive. Let's parenthetically mention right now that John Skipper is a very forward-looking guy who loves diversity is very important to him. Female empowerment is very important to him. And you have three white guys running that side of the business for him. So I know that's a little frustrating for him. But it'll be interesting. I think the most important thing is that Skipper say to those three guys, look, let's spend the time doing your job. Do not try elbowing each other out. This is, and by the way, they shouldn't, because I do believe Skipper's going to get another contract. So there's plenty of time to, you know, try and get the top job.
There were two people in this, as part of these moves, who are leaving ESPN. John Kozner is a longtime executive vice president of digital. He leaves ESPN after 20 years. I mean, it's not leaves. I mean, it's essentially they bought him out or laid him off. And what was interesting there is, having heard from a lot of people who are supporters of Kozner, was that, you know, digital has done really well. It's one of the leading lights of the company. Why would you get rid of this guy? It feels like a fair question. The other person, Executive Vice President, Global Business and Content Strategy, Marie. I always mispronounce Marie's last name. How do you pronounce it?
Donahue.
Okay. I always say Donahoe, I'm sure, which is just based on her spelling, it's just a horrible job by me, and I deserve to get all the hits on the head for that. Well, she will leave at the end of the year. To give listeners who have no idea who these people are, at least we'll take Marie for a second. This is one of John Skipper's true right hands for a long time. She was the executive in charge of Grantland, and then Grantland folded, and it got, I think, a little, as both Jim and I have written, a little problematic, maybe we'll be sort of is saying it lightly, between her and Bill Simmons. It did not end well between those two at all after they were tight for a long time. She is also the person who is the business person in charge of running 538. She is also the person, and this is very significant for me, Jim, who came in and fixed the undefeated by bringing in Kevin Merida, the managing editor of the Washington Post, one of the most respected and beloved news editors in the country, figured out a way, obviously with a lot of Disney money in stock, to get him out of the Post, and he came in, and if nothing else, the undefeated now is a publication that's running daily, does a lot of excellent work, and Merida, if nothing else, has given that brand a shot for long-term success. And Marie gets credit for that. She and Skipper, but really she is the one who sort of closed there. Marie is the one that surprised me, Jim. And you probably have more insight into me. You know, Kozner, when you're at those levels and management makes changes, sometimes you get blown out. I'm sure financially he'll be fine. He'll get another job somewhere. But the Marie one surprised me, just because that for so long was like part of Skipper's kitchen cabinet, his inner circle.
Well, one could argue that Kozner and Marie were the two closest.
So what aides. you know this better than me. What happened? What should someone who's interested in the internal politics of ESPN discern from this?
I believe Kozner could have stayed if he was willing to report to Connor, and I don't blame him for a moment for saying no. That's probably nothing personal against Connor. In fact, people who know John Kozner, he's kind of like Switzerland. He gets along with everybody, but I think he had reached a point in his career where he felt like that was going to be deleterious to his future and to how he wanted to operate. And so he made a decision. And I think that was painful for Skipper to see him in that position, but Skipper had to do what he wanted to do. With regard to Marie, look, I think that there are people in Bristol who can convict or acquit with Marie. And I think that she had a lot of successes, and I think there were some frustrations, and I think that there were some disappointments. And Skipper obviously made the decision that, after being incredibly supportive to her, I don't think he championed anyone more. I can't think of anyone else that he championed more than Marie. The time
maybe interestingly enough, maybe Bill Simmons on the talent side, but nobody on the business side.
Well, I think more than Simmons, because Simmons was very good at championing himself.
For certainly. So, so what happens there? I mean, in terms of, do you think that, you know, I was going to ask you when you came in here, like, did sort of how Grantland ended and publicly really a bad look for them of their own self-inflicted, but she sort of like after that did other things. So I don't know if that was the carryover, but do you think Simmons, do you think Skipper thought of Marie differently after Grantland? Or if you look at it from the business term, did that gain her plaudits? Because she, you know, you do need somebody who's the face to kill something if you don't want to be the bad guy in this case. And all of ESPN management knew that once Grantland was folded, they were going to look like the bad, evil overseers, because Skip Simmons and the rest of the Grantland crew was going to turn social media into, look what ESPN did. They killed one of the great things that we had.
Right. Well, look, I mean, I think there is a touch of irony in the sense that the Grantland episode was very, very difficult for everyone involved. It was, certainly was difficult for Marie. I think that the staff, because they were in that Simmons state of mind, was not predisposed to back her, and there were certain mistakes that were made on both sides. But I think that the irony was that she survived it. Simmons was gone. So, you know, you might think at that moment, Marie now has clear sailing.
Yeah, right.
And particularly given the support that Skipper had for her. And it didn't turn out that way.
Which is interesting just because she had these two high-profile properties that I think John Skipper sort of intellectually and personally really is invested in. 538, which is a very – whether you like the connection of politics and ESPN, it's a very smart brand with a lot of smart content creators there. They do a lot of, in my opinion, interesting things. And The Undefeated has been a pet project of Skipper's for a long time. I mean, he has walked the walk on bringing more people of color under the tent, both on air and digitally. And The Undefeated is one of the, I think, the highlights of that vision. I mean, he created or he funded the creation of this remarkable site that fuses race, culture, and sports. And again, you may have the argument, none of this belongs to ESPN, stick to sports, blah, 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 whatever. He's a chief executive who put money behind an idea. And so Marie was front and center with both of these two projects that he liked. So I'm...
Which is why it pisses me off when people say, oh, anybody who's kind of being critical of Marie right now is being sexist. Because John Skipper is not sexist. And to say that this situation is a sexist situation is just wrong. I mean, he championed her, and
definitely
this decision has been made. This is. I do not believe this has anything to do with John Skipper being, not appreciative of female executives in the company. Quite the opposite. I think he did everything he could to position her for success.
All right, a couple more here. I could talk about this for hours. It'll be interesting to see what kind of traffic and feedback we get, because our podcasts do really, really well. They over-index on my podcast significantly. But this is probably the
Which
most
podcast.
When me and you do a podcast, it over-indexes significantly on traffic versus some of the others. That's a compliment to you. But this is the most inside baseball one we've ever done. So we'll see, because it's not. We're not talking about necessarily consumer, you know, hey, what do you think of John Gruden, blah, blah, blah. You know, this is, so we'll see. It'd be interesting.
I just think, you know, I think that the one thing that I would say about what we're talking about today is it's very inside baseball. At the same time, it's emblematic of what happens inside a dynamic media company today, because there
right.
are, things are changing so fast. What kind of executives can keep up with it? How is a how is a place like ESPN going to organize itself? What are the challenges? How do they respond to change? How do they define success? So in a way, I mean, you know, I went to business school and all we did was case studies. It's a perfect case study that has many applications outside of Bristol, Connecticut.
Yeah, let me say this, and I'm the first person to admit, like, there are people at ESPN I would kill if they were working at Time Inc. and Sports Illustrated, because I think they are brilliant, bright minds. And so every organization has these challenges, and they are uniquely positioned to figure out these challenges far more than most other organizations. So that is not something I would ever rip on them. And it honestly, quite frankly, makes me envious how they have at least set themselves up. And part of this is because they were an ATM for 30 years to sort of set themselves up in the future. Hold on one second before you, whatever you say. I don't want to forget this. There are now three executives who used to report to John Skipper who now report to Connor Schell. Norby Williamson, former sort of content chief, now an executive VP of production. Stephanie Drewley, who runs all the studio production. Basically, anybody you see on a studio show now runs through Stephanie Drewley, one of the highest profile ranking women in the sports media, at least in management terms. And Rob King, who we mentioned previously before, he runs SportsCenter. King oversees all news and information. Drewley oversees global production. Williamson oversees daytime programming, original content. I think he now has the talent office. It's amazing, Norby Williamson. He's a survivor. I give him props. What do you make of those three reporting to Connor, and what do you make of those three long-term? I would think Skipper, because I think he really does care about having women in significant roles, I'd watch for Julie's ascension. I mean, she's pretty high now, but, you know, that's somebody who started at the company as like maybe a PA. She was the NFL countdown producer forever, Berman's producer. So she's moved up into some pretty significant waters here.
She played a key role with Longhorn.
Yeah,
I mean, let's start with Norby, because I think if there was an atomic blast in Bristol, the cockroaches would be there and Norby.
I have a soft spot for Norby, but that mother effer hired Bob Knight, so I still have trouble getting past that one. Norby, you're right, he is a survivor. The only thing on earth that will survive the nuclear warheads that are coming are like certain animals in Norby.
One of the hardy perennials every year is somebody calling me up and saying, "Well, you know, I hear Norby's out." And it's like, "Oh yeah, right. Let's go to Vegas on that one."
That Simmons calling you when he says?
Stephanie is incredibly talented, and Skipper has a lot of faith in her. And now we get to watch how Connor is going to be a manager of other people too.
I think those three people I just mentioned. One, they're all smart. And I know that Connor has a pretty good relationship with them. So I would think that
Connor's a good boss.
Yeah. I think like that's not going to be an issue, because my sense is that Connor Schell is going to be like, "Norby, you do what you do. Stephanie, you do what you do. Rob, you do what you do. I'm not going to be a day-to-day bothering the shit out of you." I think that's going to work out fine. The interesting thing, of course, is when it gets a little closer to whenever the end is for Skipper, you know, even if Burke Magnus and Connor Schell like each other, even if Justin Connolly and Burke Magnus like each other, there can only be one king, and that to me would be interesting if there's ever a bake-off possibility, how the relationships sort of work there.
I mean, there's another dynamic work too, which is that, look, Connor has a great wife and kids, and I think he's done, from all accounts, a wonderful job at balancing professional and personal life. And
now this changes now, because this is a bigger, big, big job, right?
This is, you know, this could be like an 80-hour week.
And he's a New York-based guy as opposed to a Bristol guy. That's always a factor in all this stuff. I don't know if you saw this, but I asked an agent, well-known, long-time agent, like what it's like to negotiate with Connor Schell and what do you think of him? And this agent said, likes him, honest broker, but the most interesting thing about Connor Schell is that he's been away from Bristol, and he doesn't necessarily buy into all the Bristol bubbles because he was sort of a creature of New York, which is interesting because some of the other people we mentioned, including Norby, are the ultimate Bristol creatures. So I think and John Skipper's not a Bristol creature per se because he works out of New York too. So interesting that the manage, you know, the number two guy now, at least, or the number one guy in content, let's at least say, is not of that campus. He's sort of New York, and now will travel to that campus.
And he's well-versed in L.A. as well.
Well-versed in L.A. as well. Great point.
So there's a cultural component here that has every chance for change as well.
All right, a couple more things. What have you heard about morale since the layoffs? You obviously talk to people at ESPN. They call you, I'm sure, just to sort of chat, even if you're not reporting anything. I have my own sort of information and thoughts about this, but I'm curious as to what you've heard.
Here's the big question. Are there more coming?
I think yes. We agree?
Yes.
Right.
But what are the nature of them? Because I think that, look, the last round of 100 and, you know, camera forward facing people, that was shocking. All of a sudden, you know, Ed Werder, wait a second, this one, that one. I mean, these are people that they knew, we know. It's, you know, people we've watched for years, people who are really, really good at their jobs and through no fault of their own, you know, just disappearing. And so that was startling. The 300 before, 2 years ago.
That was the massive one.
That was the massive one. And I think that one sent a chill down the network spine because there were so many people who grew up in that network and they just never had to contemplate a day like that. So the question becomes, is there another round? What is the nature of that round? How extensive is it going to be? And as they try and figure out what the best policy, what the best model is, you know, what is going to make this organization the most efficient, and what is Disney willing to do financially while they make this, they figure out. Look, the next 2 years, I believe, at ESPN are going to determine the next 8 or 10.
Yeah.
That's how critical this is. And so, you know, are there further changes coming? I believe there are, and but, you know, look, I'm not trying to wish anyone ill will. It just, we'll see what Disney has in mind. I do know this, that everything that goes on right now at ESPN is about one thing. It's about Wall Street. It is about this Disney stock price. They don't really care about anything we're talking about right now in terms of inside dynamics and who, if it all leads to a narrative that Wall Street can understand, so Wall Street stops penalizing Disney stock for what Wall Street perceives as, oh, wait a second, 13 million households at $8 a month. This is hemorrhaging. We don't know the way out of it. That they have to reverse that narrative. They have to come up with a new story. And so if all these things put together create a different kind of story on Wall Street, then that's success.
It's, you know, again, no one obviously sort of is going on the record, but you talk to people inside and outside on ESPN, and they believe layoffs are coming. I don't want to alarm anybody. I haven't necessarily heard, like, whether it's front-facing or behind the scenes. I would have to guess it would be both, and I don't think the numbers will be nearly as large as they were in the past, but I think they're coming in the same way, you know, whether it's Sports Illustrated or whatever, you know, Vox or whoever. I mean, it's sort of a never-ending drumbeat of this stuff. What's interesting, Jim, here's the interesting thing about ESPN in terms of these layoffs. Morale has absolutely been hurt, and it's weird for the people who still work there to have lost these colleagues. And many of these colleagues were at the top of their game. There wasn't a meritocracy element to it. They were people who were outstanding at their jobs, and they lost their jobs. I mean, Jay McMass is a really close friend of mine. We teach together, and she was one of the people laid off. It's just inconceivable if you look at her work based on the quality of her work, but it happened.
I mean, she's incredible.
At the same time, they're still hiring people, and they're going to continue to hire people. So it's this weird, I'm probably not going to really like sort of phrase this great. It's this weird place still where it's still the ultimate destination in sports for many, or maybe for everybody. Yet it's no longer the safety, it's no longer the safe harbor that it once was. So they'll always get great people. They're going to still pay well. And there's going to be a million people who want to go there. But I think what's irrevocably changed, maybe you agree, I imagine you would, is that where in 1995, if you got to ESPN, you sort of believe like, I've made it. I'm going to try to do my best to stay here as long as possible. And I might be here for 20, 25 years. And I'm working at the best company in America. Now, if you go there in 2017, yeah, you've made it. But there's no guarantee that you might be out of there in 2 or 3 or 4 years. And that's what's changed to me is that it's sort of really scary for all of us is that the one place that you always said was the safe harbor in the way the New York Times was probably the safe harbor for news people is no longer the safe harbor unless you're John Gruden.
How about the people who were hired in 2015 and 2016, and they said, listen, if you want to make a commitment to this place, you're going to move here.
Right.
So they picked up their families and they moved.
Amazing.
And then they were laid off.
I mean, well, the Sarah Walsh story that I reported is incredible. I mean, just horrible.
This is the big kind of cloud hovering over everything, which is we're in a very, very atypical calm period right now, 2017. But very quickly, Monday Night Football and the big football packages and baseball and conference championship, conference deals, college football. I mean, ESPN has spent over $25 billion in Skipper's era, I believe, on college football. These deals are going to be coming up. And what is Burbank's appetite for paying these enormous sums? And if they don't have those, what happens to them? Or do they need them so much that they're going to have to pay ridiculous money, and that's going to mean even more?
I think the latter. They have to. I mean, ESPN can't be ESPN without live sports rights. You agree? There's just no business.
Well, yes, but first of all, the NFL is their crack cocaine.
Right.
I mean, that's the problem, which is the NFL knows that at the end of the day,
they have
ESPN
the leverage.
Can't say. That's how they got to $1.9 billion on Monday Night Football. For basically what is now
fourth or fifth best package, right?
So I mean that's what I'm enormously interested in, and that's going to be a decision that's going to come from Burbank, both in terms of how much they're going to pay and
they have to be a partner with the NFL. Can ESPN exist without the NFL rights? Sure. But essentially, they can't be ESPN without them, so they have to deal.
Right. But
I mean, I'm saying they could physically put on a network, but without the highlights and without everything that is connected to that NFL rights deal, they don't exist.
You know what that does to the sub fees?
It's over. Yes,
I mean, forget it. Yeah. But here's the other danger, which is we're entering in such a new era where who knows what Facebook, Twitter, Google,
Amazon. The NFL may not want ESPN as much.
Look, who knows what Jeff Bezos alone is thinking?
Yeah, but I think I think in our lifetime, ESPN will still be such a factor in our sports cultural life that the NFL is going to want to be associated with them. It's just, there's too big an audience.
I'm just saying, what are the repercussions, though?
Right, I understand.
At a certain price, ESPN gets to, let's just say, major premise, they hold on to the NFL. Minor premise, they have to pay so much that their entire ecosystem changes
as
a result.
You know what it is? Maybe they don't get, I mean, I don't, I, as crazy as this sounds, maybe they don't have Monday Night Football 10 years from now. Maybe it's one half of a Thursday night package. I'm just making that up. Who knows? Or Saturday night package or whatever it is.
I don't know, or maybe they all of a sudden say to themselves, football and the NBA are so important to us that we're going to have to give up the tonnage of Major League Baseball.
That I could see.
I mean,
we'll never bid on soccer again. We're out of the MLS business. Or maybe they'll totally do something like, well, let's expand on esports. We're going to get out of these other sports and we'll gamble on
this. Skipper loves soccer, but you know what? Maybe he says to himself, okay, I can no longer bid $100 million
Listen, they didn't get the Champions Rights League. They don't have the World Cup. So they're still in soccer with MLS, but their portfolio in soccer is reduced dramatically. And I don't know if they're getting back in the game so quick on that other stuff. Fox has the World Cup for a while, including the American World Cup that we likely are going to see. So I don't know if ESPN's getting back in this big soccer game so quickly.
And maybe some of these other kind of marquee things like the Masters and Wimbledon.
They're heavily invested in tennis for sure. We'll see. It's a good, very good question. I could see them getting out of baseball. I would not be surprised at that.
But baseball's tonnage.
Baseball is tonnage. Yeah. I mean, they're never going to get, I should be specific. They'll always talk about baseball. I could see them maybe not doing two nights of baseball anymore. Maybe they only do one. Maybe they do no games. But I think at a certain point, if the rights fees keep going up, you got to choose. You got to sort of make and choose your dealings. I think the network will always be involved in college sports. So I always believe that they're going to continue to try to deal with the Big Tens and the Big 12s and the college football playoffs. I feel like that's as big a part of ESPN's DNA as NFL. You agree? College, I don't think goes away.
I think so. But you know, listen, it was staggering to see how much the Big Ten got.
Oh yeah,
you know. And so, at what point does that kind of look? The Skipper mantra was, "It's about live, stupid."
Right.
And that cost a lot of money.
It did.
And he's got a big moat now, and we'll see how much he can afford to keep it.
Yeah, I would. I'll tell you one to watch if you're a listener. Watch for the UFC to see how big ESPN's interest is or is not, because that's the next one of the next big rights deals coming up. That's a young audience. They just got into boxing much more significantly, but it's going to cost them. So I'll be curious to see. And Fox is going to want that. But if you're Skipper and you're a competitor, you know that if you swipe UFC from Fox, that puts a big hole in FS1. So that's one to watch. Last one. A lot of people ask me on Twitter all the time, with Connor Schell being now front and center at ESPN, with some time passed from Grantland being folded, what do you think of the relationship between Bill Simmons and ESPN? And can you see Simmons, I don't think he's going back there, but could you see him being in business with them at all, from the small to he's going to appear on some of their shows, to the big where maybe there's some kind of partnership between The Ringer and ESPN?
I think it's fair to say that the relationship between Bill and Connor is incredibly complex and has been like an EKG. I think there have been, and I don't want to...
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
I don't want to get into...
get into it, man. We need ratings.
You know, I think it would be overly simplistic to say that, you know, 5-6 years ago, they were blood brothers and they've marched together ever since. That might be, a story, a little book-worthy story. But my own,
save it.
No,
for
no, I'm just saying. But I think, look, I think that Connor wants to make his own mark, and I think that Bill is probably not inclined to come back. And I don't think I don't even think there's a financial architecture that could. That could make that happen.
Well, I'm not talking about necessarily. I don't think Bill is coming back in any as a staffer. But could you see a? Again, I'm making this up. It's not the greatest idea, but could you see The Ringer and ESPN entering in any kind of partnership where maybe some Ringer content would somehow appear in an ESPN platform? Could you see that?
To what point? I mean, I'm not.
I understand.
I don't.
Simmons has had some ESPNers on his podcast, which is a new thing. I believe Zach Lowe did a Simmons, but you know, I mean, that's new. Yeah. If nothing else, that they've at least
that happened with Dan Patrick. I mean,
yeah, the hard feelings sort of at least have receded a little bit to the point where there's been some people. Simmons has gone on a couple ESPN podcasts, I believe, and if I'm right about this, I think some ESPNers have appeared on Bill's podcast, maybe some former Grantland types. So that's if nothing else, that's a little bit of a maybe not detente, not the right word, but a softening of the
right.
of the bad feelings. Right?
I just don't think we should be sitting around waiting for them to start
singing
Kumbaya.
I think, first of all, I think it would be kind of weird for... I don't think Bill Simmons wants to be an employee anymore. He owns his own company. Why on earth would you want to do that?
No.
And money's not an issue for that guy. He's got generational wealth, as we say. There's a need to go back to ESPN to get money. All right, listen. Quite frankly, I have no idea if this was interesting, but I enjoyed spending an hour with Jim Miller, all the same. Is there anything, is there anything else you want to add? Because I want to get you out of here. I know you have some meetings.
Nope.
Who are you meeting with today? Book agent? CAA? Battle of the Network Stars? All right. James Andrew Miller. Let's give the right thing here. Let's see if I can pull up on Google. I like to, I like to make this a circle here. Okay, here we go. James Andrew Miller, his book, Powerhouse, The Untold Story of Hollywood's Creative Artist Agency, is now out in paperback. Check that out. If you're like a B-school person or you're just interested in... the agency side of media, which is fascinating. I will tell you guys quickly just one thing, and Jim will appreciate this. Battle of the Network Stars is coming. It's, I believe, a WME IMG production, and three of the hosts are CAA people. That's why this is all fascinating to me. Joe Tessitore, Mike Greenberg, Cassidy Hubbard, they're all CAAers, right? On a competitor's program. This is why this world is fascinating. I wish I understood it as well as Jim, but... In the end, when anybody says who are the winners and losers of the ESPN, blah 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 blah, it's always the agents. That's who wins all this. Live from New York, the complete uncensored history of Saturday Night Live is told by its stars, writers, and guests. That is the oral history of Saturday Night Live. Check that book out. It's the definitive book on Saturday Night Live. And as many people who listen to this podcast already know, Jim is the author of These Guys Have All the Fun, Inside the World of ESPN. And as he said both on this podcast and elsewhere, there's going to be an updated book. It's going to take you from the end of that book to essentially present time and think of all the stuff that's happened from Grantland to the undefeated not starting and then starting, Skipper's transitioning in terms of management, I mean, you know, obviously the horrible layoffs and stuff. So a lot of amazing, crazy stuff has happened in ESPN over the last couple of years. So that will be interesting. All right, Jim, listen, it's always great when you come in and you are kind enough to come into the studio, which other guests do not always do. So I appreciate that. And do you want to give a plug to your upcoming podcast series before we get out of here? You might as well.
Podcast called Origins, which is going to examine the beginnings of things in music and movies and television and politics and relationships even. And we're going to get geared up right after the summer.
Okay, so that starts in the summer?
At the end of the summer.
Do you have a first show you want to announce yet, or do you want to hold off on?
I'm not allowed, but I'm really excited.
You're excited about it. Okay, yeah. Excellent. All right, previous guests on this podcast, at least I'll give you the last couple. Molly Solomon, the executive producer of the Golf Channel, and Doug Ferguson, the most read writer in the country. He works for the AP. We had a sports media roundtable with O'Ran and Trina, Ken Rosenthal of the MLB on Fox and MLB Network. We did the tribute to Frank DeFord, if you want to check that out. DeFord is one of your favorite writers. Had six writers talking about him, including Sally Jenkins. That was a cool episode. James Duthie of TSN. And as we mentioned on this podcast, Kevin Merida, the editor-in-chief of The Undefeated, who was a really interesting guest. And if you love politics, man, he offered some insight into what Washington Post reporters covering Trump have to deal with on a daily basis, which was really interesting to me. The producer of this fine podcast today was Matt Havia. We appreciate his time. Thanks to everybody at Digital Media and Sports Illustrated for supporting this podcast. Please go to Apple and check out the Media Podcast with Richard Deitch. Give us a rating. And if the ratings continue to be as great as they have been, I will bring Jim Miller back because he's a rock star and he's beloved by all people. Jim, this is why I can't end a podcast. It's just a terrible job by me. All right, listen, for Jim Miller, for Matt Havia, for Lou Pellegrino, who I believe is honeymooning somewhere in Cyprus. I just made that up, Matt. We'll see you next time on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.